Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. On our program today, we're going to share with you a couple of regular features, such as the Lifeline's health information, as well as an amazing fact. A little bit later in our first half hour, we're going to have a discussion, which we've entitled Reflection on Pandemics. But first, I'll play for you a selection from a CD entitled Soul Influence. A couple of the individuals on the CD are actually students at MUN. And the selection I'll play for you is entitled Thando Luka Baba, which in English means God's love.
Thando Luka Baba. Thando Luka Baba. Lubanzi Lumjulile.
Oh,
it comes to health and nutrition, we have numerous opinions that we face every day and numerous diet plans and health information sessions that all share different information as to what our diet should consist of. How much protein should we eat? How much carbohydrate should we eat? This is the next Lifeline Health production by Dr. Becky Wong. Will shed a little bit of light as to what our diet should actually consist of.
Are you tired of all those fad diets? There seems to be a new one every week. I'm Dr. Becky Wong for Lifelines. With a combination of keeping active and eating the right amounts of nutritious foods, you can achieve a weight that is natural and healthy. When thinking about the servings you need in each food category, think 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 3 protein, 4 fruits, 5 vegetables, and 6 grains a day. You don't have to try diet after diet. By adding activity to each day and paying attention to the portions you eat, you'll find yourself feeling better and even shedding some pounds without unhealthy dieting. Remember, 3 protein, 4 fruits, 5 vegetables, and 6 grains. It all adds up to less pounds.
Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
In 1854, London, England, had a devastating outbreak of cholera, a deadly disease that struck with apparent cruel and randomness. But Dr. Don Snow used maps and medical data to show the spatial relationship between particular water pumps and affected areas. He demonstrated that the water supplied by an affected pump caused the deaths in the area surrounding that pump. Jesus tells us that if we drink water from broken cisterns, that we will continue to thirst and in the end die. Jeremiah says, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. But the water that he shall give will be a well of water springing up into everlasting life." Like the woman at the well, people today are longing for this precious, pure water. "Sir, give me water to drink, that I thirst not, neither come here to draw." It seems that more and more often in the news, we hear information around disease and pandemics and such as, you know, the bird flu or SARS or a number of disease outbreaks around the world.
In 2007, 1.7 million people in the developing world died from tuberculosis. And in Canada, TB has never really gone away. As Christopher Grosskreutz reports, public health officials have controlled but never destroyed the disease.
Just inside the door of a TB clinic in downtown Toronto, there's a big color poster of a pair of lungs. Next to these lungs is a rack with a fact sheet about tuberculosis. It's in 13 languages. Dr. Elizabeth Ray describes some of the communities the Board of Health is reaching out to.
Vietnamese, Chinese, Farsi, Urdu.
As Toronto's Associate Medical Officer of Health, it's Ray's job to monitor the incidence of the disease here. 1 in 5 new cases of TB in Canada is detected in Toronto.
You think you got it under control, you let down your guard, and it can flare up again.
One of the reasons Ray and other health officials in southern Ontario worry that TB could flare up again is because of immigration patterns. Many newcomers to this country choose to settle here.
Toronto and other parts of Canada as well are centers of immigration. People bring with them all kinds of strengths and richnesses, and sometimes they also bring a TB infection as well.
And so a call has gone out in a number of languages on the internet warning new Canadians about the dangers of TB. Recent figures show there are about 300 cases of tuberculosis in Toronto a year. In the past, TB in this country has been a disease associated with the homeless and Aboriginal communities. But immigrants now account for 95% of new cases in Canada's biggest city. Christopher Groskurth, CBC News, Toronto.
Doctors in Africa are having trouble dealing with a new strain of drug-resistant TB. South Africa has one of the highest drug-resistant tuberculosis infection rates in the world. As Bruce Edwards reports from a township in Cape Town, healthcare workers are desperately trying to contain the disease.
On our program today that we've entitled Reflection on Pandemics, we want to look at this issue from a biblical perspective, looking at issues that are taking place in the world as we speak. As usual, we have Mario Sarek in the studio with us. But Mario brings an interesting perspective to this. Welcome today again, Mario.
Thank you, Paul.
Many, perhaps most of you don't realize that even though Mario teaches here at the Marine Institute, that he also spent a year recently over in Europe. He spent some time working at the ECDC, which is the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control, and gained a wealth of information there, which exposed him to a lot of information that came in from a number of the European countries in the area of health. So, Mario, maybe you'd like to start off by sharing a bit of that experience with us.
Yes, Paul, because I was in charge or working with a number of scientists in the data collection and looking at some of the diseases all through Europe. This body, which is part of the European Commission, was put in place in 2005 as a way to monitor various diseases, influenza and pandemics within the European Union, but also countries around the European Union. Obviously, we know that disease doesn't have a passport, doesn't need a passport. Where people travel, you're more likely to see a pandemic, some sort of, where disease are being transmitted. We know a lot of today because of the flight, airports are a major problem for disease. And I think most people will not forget probably last year when the actually was alarmed here in Canada, in Montreal, about a passenger that had discovered he had a TB, a nasty variation of TB that is drug resistant. And this individual came from Prague, I believe. And, you know, they had a major alarm set off because of the contagious of this TB. So with that, you know, this center was set up to monitor different things in a preventive way, but also to have advice to give to the various nations that made up the European Union. Each country has their representative, but they wanted something that could be centralized and be able to monitor the various outbreaks. So the data will be sent in, analyzed, collected, and monitored for any possible outbreak that could be. And, of course, measures will be in place trying to curb that pandemic.
Yeah. Now, before we do talk about some of the outbreaks and the disease issues, maybe we could talk a little bit more about this idea of the spreading of disease. Because obviously, when we go back, you know, a century or two, which not that long ago, there wasn't a lot of international travel per se, like we face on today's scale. And I think that the biggest or the first time we saw a lot of intermingling of people on an international scale was perhaps during the war. And, you know, we talked about this before the program. Maybe you could just dwell on that for a little bit.
Well, I think we will think back to 1918. That was the 1914 to 1918 was the First World War. And, of course, that was the, a lot of movements of troops within, you know, from America to Europe. And interesting, at that time, 1918, 1718, to those years, we have this influenza virus that breaks out. We know as the Spanish flu, that was tremendous. I mean, it killed more people than the war itself. Looking estimates are anywhere from 20 million to 50 million And that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, but this was interesting. As this virus came from, originally from the Asian part, which is very interesting, and it has, why the scientists are interested in this is because this flu came from the birds. And H1N1 is the original one called. And we all remember the ones that we, just the last few years, been on the news is the bird flu, H5N1. And they found cases that's actually gone from animals to humans. And that's why they were so worrisome. They killed 1.5 million birds in 1 year. And there is a potential danger that the same virus that killed 20 million people back in 1918 could be possible in our time too.
And also a recent H1N1 or swine flu that originated in Mexico that we have seen now being reported in many countries around the world. And we also notice how the virus has gone from birds to pigs, from pigs to humans. And in recent development, we've seen how it has gone from humans to pigs in Alberta. So we can see that these viruses are very mobile. I thought we can play a little bit CBC clip here about how the World Health Organization is dealing with this issue right now.
Now, later today, the World Health Organization is going to give its daily briefing. That's at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. But before that, they're going to hold what they're calling a virtual meeting with some 150 experts calling in. On the line, there'll be scientists and experts with direct experience of influenza viruses. They're going to be a widely international group from Mexico, the United States, Europe. We don't know yet who's going to be on the line from Canada, probably more than one expert. And they're going to be sharing all their information on the transmission and control of diseases, diagnostic tests, and sources of viruses. The CBC's Nancy Durham in London.
Mm-hmm. So that's why they're keeping that very monitoring. But it's back to 1918 is interesting, because as this flu was going around in Europe, and people were dying. I mean, even the people who would normally seem to be healthy were getting this virus and dying. I mean, in the morning, they'll contain it, get it, and in the evening, they'll be buried. That's how fast it was.
That's incredible.
But it was interesting. During this time, during the war, something interesting in one of the particular countries in Europe, and I thought I'll want to just briefly mention, it was Denmark. And the Danish government appointed a doctor. He was a medical doctor, but he was also a nutritionist. And his name was Dr. Michael Hindhede. And he's a fascinating physician because they asked him, how do we deal with the war and supplying our people a diet that we can survive? Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because Denmark is one of the major dairy producers and meat producers too, and so on. But it was interesting at that time, it was, the main diet in the world or was propagated was a high protein diet.
Which we often see today in our
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. Well, Atkinson diet is a high protein diet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, Dr. Hint here, the first thing he did was he said, we're going to do a reverse because all the grains were going to feed the livestock. He said we will eliminate or reduce the livestock and we will use our lands to grow grains and wheat and, you know, vegetables and so on. And that will be able to sustain our people during this time.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, 40% from 1917 to 1918, 3 million people, this is like the biggest study ever done, 3 million Danish people took on this diet and reduced basically cancers and all diseases by 40% in 1 year because of this drastic change. Of course, we know the wars create this, that you cannot eat overconsumption of sugars and other things, of course. But this was interesting, too.
Basically, you no longer have an affluent diet, you know, during a period of war. You're basically sustaining yourself on the basics.
But it was interesting, too, what happened with this influenza as it was spreading through Europe. And this was towards the end of the First World War. The other countries who had a high protein diet, they saw a lot of these, you know, large animal consumption. They suffered by thousands, not just mention, you know, this influenza that was in millions, but other diseases, degenerative diseases, they were taking hold of people's lives. And it's interesting, unknowing to this Dr. Hindhede, that this Spanish flu, which had a very similarity to the bird flu virus that we know today, was spreading through the animals crossing over to humans. And some studies have linked that it was actually through pig farms. And bird flu was eventually carried to other places, and, you know, humans then was going crossed over to humans. But by doing that drastic change in the Danish people diet, mm-hmm. the study shows that they were very little affected by the Spanish flu in the whole Denmark, while the other countries were having these major deaths in other countries.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, by maintaining a diet that we certainly advocate on this program frequently, mm-hmm. and, you know, the vegetarian diet, which is naturally low in protein, is a good preventative measure for ensuring that you maintain health, to prevent you from acquiring certain diseases. And it doesn't happen for everyone, but yet you have a much greater chance at maintaining ideal health by maintaining an ideal diet.
Yeah, because he propagated a low protein diet around 20 grams. I mean, that mm-hmm. time 100 grams was a common thing to mm-hmm. say we need a lot of protein, and we see effects not just degenerative diseases, but other diseases that might be prominent in the population wide mm-hmm. will not take on if you have a good, healthy diet. Yeah.
Because we see many diets today that are still heavy on the protein, which, you know, certainly has adverse effects once you start getting up to the, you know, the 50, you know, grams a day of protein.
And I thought, you know, that was an interesting to bring that there was a study when I was in Sweden at the university, actually the public series that they were addressing, mm-hmm. You know, because of the environment was a very prominent mm-hmm. Al Gore's movie had come out, and there was this hype about the environment is changing. Mm-hmm. Things are, you know, changing the landscape in terms of will have an effect on how we grow things. We'll have enough, you know, food to feed people. And
what university was that again?
This was Uppsala University in Sweden. Yeah. And it was a secular university addressing what they call Armageddon or end of the humankind.
Okay.
That's interesting. And they brought in different experts, professors from different fields of the expertise mm-hmm. to talk in a general audience, you know, not to professionals, but in general addressing some of these world issues. And one thing there that they brought up was, of course, wars and how they will have effect. Environment was a big thing, of course. Food supply, overpopulation, growth, and so on. But, you know, one thing, all of them had issues, but they said over time we could improve them. We can get out of this mess, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there was one group that was very fascinating. They were looking at pandemics and diseases around the world. And these were genetics, and of course medical professions who had the panel. And basically, you know, the dean asked them, don't you have any good news for us? Mm-hmm. And they just shook their head. They said, no, this is it. This is the big thing. You know, if we get a pandemic on our hands and we don't have places to control it, to stop it, mm-hmm. all the other things are nothing compared to a pandemic on a large scale around the world. And that's what their concern was, you know, monitoring closely some of this avian flu, because H5N1, mm-hmm. I find out that that's just one of the many strains that it can take on. There's actually over 100 other possibilities. Mm-hmm. Mutations of this one virus, and they only know H5N1. So you can imagine what, you know, even if it mutates and if you have something against it, it can mutate in a year or two. So
it's not quite significant.
Yeah. So I can see their concern, you know, that mm-hmm. the economy and the, as we discussed today, you know, it's a big thing, or worse, all be secondary. Consider that people are going to be dying and the health, hospitals and so on will be, you know, drained to their max to mm-hmm. trying to deal with it on a large scale. We had an example with SARS.
With regards to, you know, pandemics and maintaining ideal health, the Bible does mention a number of factors, you know, that uphold the principles of health. One is diet, obviously. The Bible endorses, promotes a diet that promotes health. And it's interesting when you look at an example from the scriptures as well, when the Israelites were in the wilderness mm-hmm. and, you know, they, in Egypt, they were used to eating the, you know, the leeks and the onions, but in the wilderness, they, you know, they craved for the flesh meat, you know, and, you know, God sent them the quail mm-hmm. and, you know, they ate the quail till they're bursting at the seams. So when the quail hit their lips, they started to die from, you know, disease from within the quail. But yet little did they probably realize that it was the leeks and onions Kenyans in Egypt that were actually maintaining their health. So it actually ties into this well.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably recorded in a pandemic, a large scale, mm-hmm. among God's people, where they went away from the principle that God was trying to teach them. Mm-hmm. And God was feeding them manna from heavenly bread mm-hmm. to sustain them. And you know, they didn't want that. They wanted something, go back to the old life, so to speak.
That high-protein diet.
High-protein diet, yes. And it has consequences. And God wanted to teach them, you know, that mm-hmm. in His Word, He has given us mm-hmm. the various health laws, not just what we eat, but you can look through Leviticus, it's full of it. Leviticus talks about quarantining procedures to control contagious diseases. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other nation had no idea about some of these things, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah. Human body waste should be buried. Deuteronomy 23 talks about that. Washing the body in clothing mm-hmm. to control germs, you find in Leviticus 17. Mm-hmm. But it also talks about moral living. Mm-hmm. I mean, moral living was important. It says that sexual diseases, for instance, they're rampant today, and we'll look at them in a minute. But in Leviticus 18 and Proverbs 5 and Colossians talks about how mm-hmm. it has an effect on how we live. Mm-hmm. If we're morally upright, that would, you know, diminish some of these diseases that are spreading like wildfire in some circles, you know.
Maybe we could look at those now, some of the diseases that we encounter, some that you encountered working with the ECDC.
Well, when I was there, you know, they classify in different categories because it's such, you got 47 diseases that we monitor, and these are the known diseases that are more prominent in the world. But one of the things there was look at HIV and things like that, bloodborne viruses, for instance. It's interesting, HIV is also linked with TB, as we just mentioned before. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, in countries where there's a high incidence of TB, which is becoming very prominent in Romania and the Eastern Bloc, TB is becoming on the forefront, which we thought we eliminated. We see also an increase in HIV. Of course, again, other diseases that comes in, the hepatitis, gonorrhea, you know, chlamydia, and all these syphilis are typical sexually transmitted diseases.
Immorality,
yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then there's other ones that classify, as we talked a little bit about, they go from animals to humans. Mm-hmm. And those that are called zoonoses. Mm-hmm. And when you look at those ones, I mean, there's about 9-10 common disease. But again, you know, you can see, as we've been looking in the Bible, that God gives us guidelines how we should live. All those classifications that I saw at ECDC, majority of them could be prevented by just following the guidelines that God gave us.
The biblical principles.
Yes.
Yeah. Which in of themselves are preventative measures to maintain health.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to bring one thing here. I saw an article here, and with a food shortage and things happening in Africa, in Zimbabwe, for instance, we knew there were cholera outbreak recently and still continue to affect other countries as well in that area. But I thought it was an interesting article. It talks about how people are going further into the rainforest mm-hmm. and killing animals, exotic animals and other animals that probably didn't ever ate before. Mm-hmm. And some of the researchers are warning that we could actually have a disease that we don't know anything about, because some of these animals might have natural disease that they don't die of, mm-hmm. but by human going in and killing and eating them.
So there is a danger of crossing the species barrier from animal to humans by eating and consuming these exotic animals. Something that comes to my mind, and people might not be aware, is that eating emu, for instance, or ostrich, and some of my people think, well, this is a little bit far-fetched, but there are farms actually in Ontario and other places in Canada that that grow these animals and are for consumption. But what is known is actually that ostrich family are receptive to the Ebola virus, and they can carry it, but the animals are not sick themselves.
You know, cross going from animals to humans mm-hmm. of a disease that could be kind of bad as HIV that started back in 85, you know.
Yeah. So instead of a mad cow disease, we could have a mad monkey disease.
Yeah. And then talking about mad cow, I mean, that's not gone yet. It's just, mm-hmm. I believe we're just sitting on the top of iceberg when it comes to mad cow. Mm-hmm. And that was another issue that was addressed at ECDC. Mm-hmm. There were always few cases popping up here and there, even mm-hmm. though the media doesn't address it, but it was just mm-hmm. because there were a few. Yeah. But we know that that was back in 95, 97. That was very peak in the UK. Mm-hmm. Some of that was still sold as feed in other countries. And I think, Paul, maybe 10 years there could be variation of that we see now in mad cow with increase of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and things like that, dementia, that we see effects of it, but we might not link it to mad cow.
Sure. Well, Mario, our time has quickly come to an end. You know, our time always goes quickly on this program. But if anyone has any questions or comments that they'd like to share with us on this subject, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.